नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 26 टेक्स्ट 21 द हेलिश प्लैनेट्स अगेन। यस्तु इह वै सर्वाभिगमस्तम् अमुत्र निरये वर्तमानम् वज्रकंटक शलिमलिम् आरोप्य निकर्षन्ति। प्लीज रिपीट द वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। यह एनीवन ट्रांसलेशन एंड प्रपोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद। अ पर्सन who indulges in sex indiscriminately, even with animals, is taken after death to the hell known as Vajrakantak Shalmali. In this hell, there is a silk cotton tree full of thorns as strong as thunderbolts. The agents of Yamaraj hang the sinful man on that tree and pull him down forcefully so that the thorns severely, very severely tear his body. Purport. The sexual urge is so strong that sometimes a man indulges in sexual relation with a cow or a woman indulges in sexual intercourse with a dog. Such men and women are put into the hell known as Vajrakantak Shalmali. The Krishna consciousness movement forbids illicit sex. From the description of these verses, we can understand what an extremely sinful act illicit sex is. Sometimes people disbelieve these descriptions of hell, but whether one believes or not, everything must be carried out by the laws of nature, which no one can avoid. We've been reading several days now about the very pathetic situation which the sinful living entity has to go through to receive his justified punishment for the various wrongs he does in this world. And as we read all these very graphic pictorial descriptions, we can only imagine how Parikshit Maharaj is feeling it. Parikshit Maharaj is the most exalted of all Vaishnavas with a very tender and soft heart. The difference between the heart of a materialist and a spiritualist is that the former is hard and the latter is very soft. Just like Krishna's heart is very soft, devotee's heart also is very soft. So as Parikshit Maharaj is hearing all this, his heart is sinking in despair. He is feeling unlimited compassion after hearing this, what the living entity has to go through. And therefore, after the canto, after this section ends, he is visibly disturbed about the whole thing. And then he asks his Guru Maharaj, how do we really go about getting rid of all this? And of course, and the famous test comes in there in sixth canto beginning, where the bona fide spiritual master is testing his disciple with various methods of getting rid of sinful reactions, beginning with karma kand, jnana kand, and then bhakti. And of course, Parshi Maharaj, as we shall see much later, he understands the fallacies of the lower processes and comes to the conclusion from within his pure heart that it is only the divine practice of bhakti which can save a person from all this. There is no other single method. Bhakti is a very exclusive process in that sense. That there is no other parallel method which even comes close to bhakti, especially in terms of its power to eradicate the reactions of sin, which a living will invariably perform. Actually, when you come to think of it, when you read all these hellish planets, practically the whole stock of civilization is eligible to go there. Everybody. As we read further, now this is all very gross type of sinful activities, sex and meat and all that. But then even much later, it talks about pride, disrespect to superiors. Even such things have got allotted hellish planets. It's not just that, you know, have to be very, very disgustingly sinful to be a candidate to go there. Even what we may think is not a very bad thing to do, just disrespect, I mean, it's a small thing. We are not trained to think very big about disrespecting superiors. But there is a hell allotted to them also. If somebody acts out of pride and does various things, even he goes to hell. Now that practically makes the whole stock of us in this world candidates, eligible candidates to go there. Who can say he's not proud? Who can say he's not disrespecting seniors? Huh? Everyone is doing that. So that goes to show to what extent is human life a life of responsibility? How much minute and how much binding are the laws of nature upon the human being? That if he even deviates, not very significantly, yet the laws are very stringent. That means human life is exclusively, you know, we have heard this millions of times by now, but in this connection we can say it again, is exclusively meant for self-realization. And any other focus in life, apart from that, if a living entity engages in, he is definitely a candidate for hell. There are only two paths in that sense. Either he is engaging in a life of purification, through yoga, could be any form of yoga, doesn't matter if it is bhakti, but as long as he is connected with some transcendental process of purification, he is engaged in a process, is engaged in a lifestyle of some regulation, some control, as against the animals which have no regulation, no control. As long as he is within the house of a lifestyle where he is learning to regulate himself, things are better off. It starts off there. But unless it culminates in bhakti, he has got no other, nothing else can save him. Even Maharaj Prachinibhari, he was such a pious king, he was doing all these Vedic performances of sacrifices, killing animals and putting them in the fire. And Narad Muni, his well-wishing friend, comes to him and tells him that even you see these animals who are there, they're waiting for you in hell. So even a life of piety, when you come to it, come to start fine-tuning the whole process of spirituality, even piety also falls very short of escaping this. falls very short. Therefore, Prabhupada very, very clearly has taught all of us in this movement and to the whole world that human life is not meant for pious living. Because pious living cannot save you from this. Piety and impiety, both are bad. Prabhupada even went further to say graphically, it's like wet stool and dry stool. That is a very powerful thing to say. Imagine somebody saying, even pious life is like stool. Now, who can take that statement? You say, you guys are, what do you think of yourself? We will be thrown up by the public as being completely egomaniacs. Who just think that only because you are doing bhakti or at least you are engaged in some process, whole process, everybody else you are dumping as, you know, into a basket of stool-like existence. But this is the Acharya's words. And we can see from this description of hellish punishment why he said that. It wasn't just to make people disgusted about impiety, but he said even that does not save you from hell. Therefore, Prabhupada very much strongly emphasized, it's only bhakti. He did not give any credibility. If the Vedic literatures give so much other, you know, sort of a menu card of various things you can do to become regulated. But Prabhupada just singled out all that, just eliminated everything, neti, 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 not this, not this. He just exclusively picked up the essence. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam, that means only bhakti. Nothing else. Exclusively. Prabhupada was a strong, strong, strong proponent of the bhakti process. Because only when we practice bhakti can the heart become truly purified. Because through the other processes, the heart does not become truly purified. And if the heart is not purified, there is no possibility of a pure desire emanating from the heart. Because the root of sin, the papa bijam, is sinful desire. So which process is there which penetrates so deep, trying to eradicate a disease which has been there for millions of years? You have to have a very powerful process which can go right down and extricate the very root of the disease. So how long is a living entity suffering from this disease of false enjoyment? How long? Prabhupada said material existence is a disease. So we can apply all the mechanics and logics and rationality of a disease to our existence here. And some diseases, 5, 10, 15 years old, it is impossible to eradicate sometimes. But imagine a disease which is existing in the heart from time immemorial. So which process is acting so very deep and, you know, that it can eradicate the root, from the very root? And the great seers like Parikshit Maharaj and all can see, no, nothing else works. This pious process of atonement and all doesn't work. Charity, austerity doesn't work. It gives some superficial benefits of eradicating the temporary results of sin. That can be counteracted. That's for sure. But it does not have the potency to eradicate the very root of the papa bijam, the desire to enjoy this world. That only bhakti can do. And when bhakti is established in the heart, then the first thing which happens in the six processes is shubhada. That you get a life of auspiciousness. The beginning of auspiciousness in human existence is bhakti. When a person starts understanding Krishna, serving Krishna, associating with Vaishnavas who also love Krishna, then is the beginning of the sun, the Uday of auspiciousness in life starts, Shubhada. And that Shubhada leads to Klesha Agni removal. That Agni of Klesha, suffering, which is rooted in Papa Bijam, can be eliminated by bhakti. Why? Because the desire for sin gets eliminated. And because a person practices bhakti, how bhakti protects us from all this? Bhakti protects us from all this because by practicing bhakti, there is Chetudarpana Marjanam. And then the auspicious virtues which are inherent in the soul get manifested. What protects a person in bhakti is the manifestation of these virtues. If following a bhakti process, the proof that if we are following a proper process is that there must be the arousal of divine virtues. If that is not happening, then something is wrong with the process of in bhakti which you are following. Because when you develop these virtues protect a person. the spirit soul has got 50 qualities, as against Krishna, who has got 64. But when you read the description of these 50 also, then you understand it is these beautiful qualities which a soul actually has inherent within his consciousness, which get aroused. And when he practices them, these virtues protect. A lot of value is given to virtues in the scriptures, in all bhakti scriptures. But as you find in Mahabharata and Ramayana, this is very, very highly upheld. That how we see at that point of time, the Pandavas, especially the most pious people in this world, how they practice virtue to such a fantastic extent. How their virtuous nature is so encompassing within their existence that even when the most situation of trial, they don't abandon virtues. And that is the hallmark of actually a true devotee. That he does not abandon virtue in trying situations. Even you find people like Duryodhana sometimes practicing virtue. Even he was a demon. For example, when Bhishma Dev pulled his 5 arrows out, said Duryodhana was instigating Bhishma because he was knowing that it was the 8th day of the battle was over. After the 8th day, for the first time, the whole turn took place in the Mahabharata. The Pandavas were getting the upper hand. Duryodhana was really, really so frightened, and he was despondent, and he went and told his friends, Dushasana and Karna, that I think we are losing this war. And then he approached with a very humble heart, with tears in his eyes, his grandfather, grandsire, Bhishma Dev. That this is happening because you are not fighting properly. Please fight for me. He implored him, begged him, even instigated him, like an expert diplomat. Instigating his Kshatriya spirit to the limits through insulting sharp words, Bhishma Dev pulled out 5 arrows from his silver quiver and holding them and touching them with his hands, he chanted Vedic mantras and empowered those 5 arrows with the entire power of his asceticism. Now, what is the asceticism of Bhishma Dev? He was the most powerful ascetic. Huh? What virtues he had followed. Huh? What is the caliber of his character? Huh? It was the most exalted of all personalities. The entire ascetic power was invested in these 5 arrows. That these 5 arrows, I will kill the Pandavas tomorrow. And we know then Krishna, the Lord in the heart of Bhishma Dev, finds out this. And then the whole story unfolds gradually. How he tells Arjuna, I think you need to go to the Kaurava camp and get these 5 arrows back. Arjuna is almost always willing. He went there. And even the most sinful Duryodhana, who even with the word of Arjuna and Bhima would, you know, incite, inflame his, you know, just inflame his heart to such an intense degree. Because they were such arch enemies. And now the war was also on. So they were literally tooth and nail just fighting to kill each other. Huh? Using all their power, potency, knowledge, skills, everything. But when Arjun comes in the night, so Arjun, so nice to see you. He gives a big broad smile and welcomes him. Said, what can I do for you? Have you come to ask for the kingdom? If you have, I'll give it to you right now. He says that. If you want a kingdom unchallenged, without fighting the war, I'll give it to you. Of course, he didn't really mean that, but he still said it. And then Arjuna told, there's no going back on the war now, but do you remember the boon you gave me? In the past, when the Gandharvas had attacked Duryodhana, at that time, Arjuna had gone to save his life. And Duryodhana has said, okay, Arjuna, in the future, anytime you want anything from me, you can come and ask. Vachan. So Arjuna says, you remember that boon, Duryodhana? I said, yes. Give me those 5 arrows. So Duryodhan, being such a treacherous, evil-minded, cruel, hateful person, he practices virtue also. He takes the arrows and said, Arjun, this is yours. Arjun just takes him, salutes him, he's gone. So the point is that in Vedic culture, even people who are demoniac exhibit at least a trace of virtue. That if I have given a word of honor to a person, then I will not go back on it. So what to talk of the Pandavas then? Who practice virtue to such a high degree. And therefore, Krishna was always attracted to them for this quality. That even under all trials and tribulations, they did not abandon practice of their faith in Krishna and practice of virtue. Even a simple deviation from virtue of giving respect can lead to us a terrible consequence that is revealed in the story of Indra, who also is a very pious person. But Indra is sitting in the, you know, heavenly abode of his very ornamented township. And then Brihaspati enters his courtroom because he's so much involved in watching this dance and everything else of Apsaras and everything, lavish life of extravaganza. He forgets to give respect to his spiritual master. Now, that may appear to be a slight deviation, but it is not a slight deviation. It's a very severe deviation. To not stand up when the spiritual master enters your presence or in the particular, you know, enclosure of the assembly, to not stand up and greet him with words and obeisances is a serious offense. And immediately he is cursed for that, for becoming a hog. Becomes a hog. So after all, in how much yagyas does Indra do? So much yagyas he performs. He's always performing yagyas in the Swarga Loka. But a slight deviation of giving, not giving respect, out. All that yagya became finished. You become a hog. So we can see, the higher the, you know, the position, very high is the responsibility which is expected out of you. So human life is an exalted birth. It is not a lowly birth. It's a very exalted birth. So in human life, when you misbehave, then there are serious consequences. Human life is a rare birth, is a very respectable birth, is a very exalted birth. And that must be, this is an intense need to follow virtue. In the process of Krishna consciousness, virtue, I was thinking, you just imagine practicing one virtue of this respect thing. Now we are all practicing Vaishnavas. We are devotional practitioners. If we were to just follow one virtue, now there are so many virtues which we are expected to follow in bhakti. No fault finding and this and that. And suppose we follow one virtue only, giving respect to all living entities. Suppose one virtue is followed by everybody, only one. Can we imagine the amount of revolution which will take place by following only one virtue? If we all at all times, to all the Vaishnavas, to all of our seniors, to all of our worshipable spiritual masters, renunciants, elders, seniors, parents, and all living entities, if we just respect everybody, what will happen? Now, it is drilled into our consciousness, amanyana mana dena, again and again, umpteen times. But how many times do we really actually live a life whereby we follow this virtue? We may call ourselves as Vaishnavas. That's, you know, so, anybody is a Vaishnava? All of us will put our hands on. Yeah. Yes, Prabhu, I'm a Vaishnava. Put me also in the list. But when you say Vaishnava, means he is known only by his qualities and virtues. And Srila Prabhupada exemplified this when he was asked, who is your follower? Prabhupada said only one word. My follower will be known because he would be a gentleman. Now, gentleman today is considered by wearing Raymond's clothes. That is gentleman. If you wear a Raymond fabric on your body, then you're a gentleman. No matter you're doing all these crazy things which is said in this chapter. having all sorts of nonsense you're doing. As long as you wear this fabric and you look decent, you are a perfect gentleman. So Prabhupada was not talking about such stupid type of standards, based on just external fabric or looks. He was talking about the quality of the heart. Politeness, courteous behavior, kindness, self-control. These are the qualities of a gentleman. So Prabhupada definitely in this one word itself has encompassed so much of what we need to put as food for thought. Now, we can ask ourselves this. I am chanting for a couple number of years now. But forget about becoming a Vaishnav. You know, what you call a Vaishnav and pure-hearted and all that. Am I become a gentleman at least? Am I what people outside will call me as a gentleman? Maybe yes and maybe no. Maybe yes in a particular situation, and in some situations, then our real side comes out. When you're put under pressure, like we heard this golden statement, the greatness of a person is to be judged by how we can tolerate provoking situations. Now, all of us think we are sufficiently great, at least much greater than the materialist. Because, you know, we have tilak and kanti and we chant. So that's something which these people don't do. But then, it is not the criteria for evaluating our own judge in greatness. It is again, as a qualitative evaluation. It is a evaluation of virtues. Do we get provoked? You go to any, you go to any desk, I mean, a railway counter or in a hospital counter, where people are just under pressure. They're anxious. Suppose you sit on the desk there and people say, the train is late, what are you doing? Where is my reservation? Suppose people keep asking 50 queries to you. You find all these people who are sitting on the counter, all these irritable people. On the airlines inquiry, you say a few words and you start asking extra questions. Sir, bol diya na abhi tumko? Bol diya abhi, what more do you want me to do? Bol diya abhi, finish now. Finish. So you can find people become very irritated. They get provoked so easily. Inflammable material. You probe extra questions and said, they will not answer you. They will not look at you. They will look at some other person who is asking questions. Easily provoked. The policeman on the street, inhaling smoke all the time, asking question, highly irritable fellow. Easily provoked. Somebody stamps his leg in the second class compartment. Finish, there's a war. So much provocable. Everyone is standing on each other's feet. All the lotuses are crumbed, completely finished. And somebody just stamps on you. And it pains you. And how easy do we get provoked? Now we can be devotees also ourselves and you can try this. So really with the heavy boots, nowadays they wear these heavy boots nowadays. Fashions. Heavy boots, and at least 2 kilos. And they were to crush your leg. Now you would really want to punch him immediately on his face. You may not do that. But is that like Brahma, when Bhrigu Muni came, eyes become red. If you can control, it's fine. But otherwise, we would get easily provoked. And that's just stamping the leg. What if somebody stamps and crushes our false ego? With a few words. With some loving Godmother may do that to us. In trying to point out our mistake and said, I think, Prabhu, I know you're really becoming too sensitive about it. And you're really become... In the moment somebody corrects us, points out one fault, and we say, I'm having millions of faults, Prabhu, ocean of faults, all that. But if somebody were to take the daring of even correcting one fault, or the millions of faults, look at how the ego will react. The hood of the snake will just rise. And sting you. I said, you think you are a great guy, At least we'll think like that. So this is what our... Krishna consciousness is all about. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvai gune sitra samasate sura. We're hoping that this chanting process, because we do see unfortunately, that even people who are chanting Hare Krishna for years, they do not manifest the qualities of a gentleman. And where people will think, is this what devotees are all about? Because of lack of training, because of proper culture and environment. Even with the practicing the highest philosophy of bhakti, some of the basic virtues are conspicuous by their absence. So, as the process of bhakti cultivation is going on, it should be our ardent prayer that how much Prabhupada wanted that devotees have these qualities. Achar and prachar. We are trained to do a lot of prachar, but we are also hoping that we can follow a lot of that prachar through our own achar. This is what will make the movement most glorious. This will make us attractive in the eyes of Krishna. Why do we practice his virtues? Not for show off. Because it is his virtues itself which are going to be attractive to Krishna. When he sees us practicing humility and giving respect to everybody else, Krishna is pleased. So the desire to practice virtue stems from our desire to please the Lord and his spiritual master. And they're not just for show off. When Krishna sees, we bow down respectfully to the spiritual master. We respect the Vaishnavas. And these are all very deep in inner things. There are external acts of devotion, like chanting, following principles, going to yatras, coming to temple. There are external acts of devotion, and they must be practiced. But side by side, along with the external acts of devotion, there has to be an inner growth, commensurate inner growth, in the form of developing these qualities. And that is what all introspection is all about. That when a devotee looks into his heart and he finds that there is still a lot of hollowness here. I have yet not imbibed the genuine qualities of a devotee. I don't respect, I have fault find, I am judgmental. Then he really, rather than pointing the faults to others, he really goes into a stage of self-repair. Repairing his own injured consciousness. And therefore, there is no time for fault finding or pointing others' faults and all that. So, when we hear of these words in the Srimad Bhagavatam, suddenly find why all these verses are given here. Maybe it is Amala Puranam teaching pure bhakti, then why so many descriptions about this terrible, disgusting things are given here? Now, Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur used to say that all these, every word, every syllable of the Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching pure devotional service. So how can today's verse teach us pure devotional service? Talking about some lusty man, lusty woman having sex with all sorts of, forbidden situations. What does it have to do with pure devotional service? But yes, it is also teaching pure devotional service. When we hear these descriptions, a devotee who's soft-hearted becomes, feels empathy for those who are going there. And he also becomes more careful. It is the illusion of Maya which makes him think that, oh, this is not for me. I'm not going to go to these places. I've taken initiation from this great personality. And from Prabhupada, I'm connected to Prabhupada. I don't have to go there. Not true. Not true. We may have to go there also. We may then go back to the Swarga Loka afterwards for enjoying the pious merits of our activities. But it does not, till we become purified of all material desires, until we eradicate all the sinful reactions through bhakti. We have performed sinful activities in our past life. We are performing bhakti now. And through bhakti, karmani nirdhati kinduja bhakti bhajam. Things are getting cleared up. The roots of sin are going away. But if we are not fully purified in this lifetime and there is a lot of sinful reactions still remaining in our stock, we may have to see these places also. It is a very serious thing. It is a very, very serious thing. So it makes a devotee very, very careful. It makes a devotee very, very conscious that even wants to avoid the very thought of deviation. What talk of indulging in illicit sex by hearing these verses? Shalmali Kantaka was a horrible thing. Thorns like thunderbolts. We can think of rose thorns or bubble thorns and long thorns. But imagine, we haven't seen thorns, you know, they are maybe 1 inch, 1 or 2, sometimes they are really in Vrindavan 2 inches long. Huh? And then you can go through and through your foot also. But thorns as powerful as thunderbolts? What kind of a thorn is that? And not just one thorn poking through you. The whole tree is filled with such thorns. And you go up the tree and then you pull down and your full body goes into like you have this shredding machine for, you know, shredding what, carrots and whatever. What do we shred sometimes? Potato. What do we shred? So many vegetables. You just shred it like that. Shook. And, you know, all this, you know, shreds come down. You shred cheese sometimes like that also. So body becomes, the Yamdutas hold your body and just go up and down like this, putting your body through the shredding machine. And you're getting, when you come down, you are into shreds. In a few seconds, then you become jointed again. And you go up again, you become shreds. You get jointed. And imagine things like that. It's funny. But it's terrible. It's terrible. How very painful that must be. A small thorn in Vrindavan, and we are like so careful. We're just walking so carefully, hoping that people in front of are getting the thorns, and at least you are walking behind them, so you're a little safe. So you're walking in a very careful way, and walking just in the middle of the road on Govardhan Parikrama, not too much this side, not too much that side. There was a little here and there deviation, and there is a thorn there to catch you. So walking really carefully, soft-footed, so that if we walk like a fart, it goes deep inside, looking very soft-footed, walk. A small thorn, we're so scared of it. Imagine Salmali Kantaka. It's painful to even think about this. So a devotee will react in two ways to this information. As we always say, bhakti is not a process of information, it is a process of transformation. So by reading all this, we're hoping a transformation will take place on two levels. One is it makes us really, really so much glued to our practice of Krishna consciousness so that we don't even deviate in thought and words and deeds. So we remain protected. This practice of virtues, practice of bhakti will protect us from these things. So we take shelter of our process of bhakti ardently, tenuously. We don't just leave it. So that makes us tenaciously adhering to our bhakti process, which protects us so much. And second of all, as we grow in Krishna consciousness, it brings about a heart of compassion where we feel pain that I may be protected by Guru and Krishna's mercy from this, but there are a lot of people I can see around me who are all candidates for this sort of punishment very soon. And a soft heart would melt, and it would inspire him to go out of his way, out of his comfort zone, to help conditioned souls from going to such a horrible place. That is what was inspiring Prabhupada. Prabhupada, knowing all this, he knows that these Westerners, they are all en masse, whole bunch of them, going to go to the hellish planets. The whole civilization in Kali Yuga is going to go there. We can be sure about this. No one would be spared. Who in Kali Yuga can be spared from this? It's terrible to think about this. If you were to just become a little more sensitive to people's suffering and adopt the mood of a genuine Vaishnava just for a few seconds, we can imagine the whole civilization today and all the people coming who are going to be born in this world henceforth for the next thousands of years till Kali Yuga ends are all going to be candidates for this place. Everybody. No one spared. Because it is a world of irreligion today. Complete irreligiosity. Complete life of hedonistic, sinful existence. Every young boy, every young girl engaging in illicit sex, rampant. Statistics are known to most of us here. You know, papers and magazines, they're just every girl, 14 years old, you know, this and that, all that crazy information is given. AIDS happening, every 11-year-old boy getting AIDS and this and that. This is all happening right in front of our eyes. If we were to be insensitive, it's okay, I'm protected from all this, that would be very hard-hearted. But if we pray to Krishna, my dear Lord, again, I see this is going to is happening all around me. Please give me that shakti, the power to somehow save at least a few conditioned souls from going to this place. I'm not a world acharya, you know, going to go around the world like Prabhupada and save people. If I can save one person from going to this hellish place, my life is successful. That's what a preacher, that's what a devotee would think. So we're hoping that these descriptions inspire in our heart a desire to become. The two results would probably result from these descriptions. One is that it will help us to become more and more tenacious, make us more tenacious in following the beautiful process of bhakti, whereby the qualities of Vaishnava would manifest. And second of all, it would inspire us to do something for this world around us, which is on the royal road to hell. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions or comments? Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.